First of all, Virshus, some obstructed view here. I'll try to move around if it's okay. Virshus, Rav Judah and Rav Willig. The Navi Yeshayahu tells us that in the future, in Emirat Hashem, not too long a future, there's going to be Kimala Haaretz Deya. That, and the way the Rambam understands that, is that because we are going to be, as Rav Judah mentioned, without Shibud Malchios and without this lack of clarity and without the problems and the challenges that we have in the world, our focus is going to be fully on Da'at, on Torah, on improving the world. And it seems pretty clearly, seems to me, very obvious that we are already beginning to see that happen. You, most of the people in this room, have grown up in the world of the internet. And of course, there's some terrible things there, as we all know. But what's fascinating is that in the old days, and they're not really so old, I feel old when I say this, in the old days, if I had an idea that I wanted to share with somebody, or if you had an idea that you wanted to share with me, so it was really very, very hard to do that. And in the old days, really, I mean, it's not so old. I was in high school and even in college when I still had to go to the library and still had to look up a card catalog and still had to, you know, bring change for the photocopy machine. And it seems clear that today, with mamish, anybody who has an idea, whether it's silly, like these life hacks that apparently people are working on, all the way to something lofty and sublime, that you have access at your fingertips to the world's greatest ideas. And the world's greatest ideas are spreading across 7 billion people's smartphones and laptops quicker than information has ever been shared in the history of humans. Let that sink in for a second. This is all an introduction. I'm very good at introductions. The actual sikha is about 30 seconds long, but the introduction is a little longer. Let that sink in for a second. You have access at your fingertips, something that your parents didn't have and your grandparents didn't have. You have access at your fingertips with a few clicks of a mouse or your fingertips, which is really, it's a pain in the neck if you gotta click more than once. You have access to the world's greatest, most important peer-reviewed information. You have more information at your fingertips than anyone in the history of the world. I say that really by way of introduction, by telling you that with everything going on in Eretz Yisrael right now, I feel extremely inadequate. There's so many people who are sharing so many beautiful things. You already heard Rav Judah tonight. I almost thought that I wasn't going to speak tonight, or I certainly don't think I can add anything more than what Rav Judah added. Because you can, and maybe we'll say you should, expose yourself to all the important things that are being said online, speakers that come here perhaps. It's never before has information like this spread so quickly. A teenage girl sitting in a bomb shelter in Sderot can share her experiences with you in ways that all of the people who sat in bomb shelters in 1967 and 1973 couldn't share. And so I recommend not only to think about this as a way to realize and recognize that Mashiach is around the corner. The arrows are all pointing in that direction. But I'm also really saying, which is something, introducing what I wanted to share with you by doing something that they tell you not to do in speech class. Not that I ever took a speech class, but they say that you're not supposed to apologize when you begin speaking. And I think that's really what I'm doing. The apology is that I don't know if I can add anything more than the sum total of the knowledge that you can acquire on your phones or on the computer, and I recommend doing that. Still, it was suggested to me that maybe I could share with you a perspective that maybe you're not getting, but I really requested and continue to request that this really be called a sicha. I have a few, certainly, words of Torah that I wanted to share with you, but I also wanted to share some observations. But really, as a sicha, I wouldn't call this a shir. And I really, really am requesting that this only be used as an introduction to further conversations. I'm here, I'm blessed with two pretty well working ears, not what they used to be, and I'm really happy. I would love to hear, and I would love to hear what you have to say, what you have to share. You have a very unique role in what's going on in the world today, and I wanted to share that with you a little bit. What I think your unique role is, that I cannot do, and your parents cannot do, and I, without exaggeration, soldiers on the front line cannot do. And I wanted to perhaps share with you what I think your role is, but I say it with extreme humility. Because the last time I worked in Camp Hask, I was a co-counselor with some of your parents and some of the other people that worked here. And the ones that I... So you know better than I do what it means to be a counselor here. You know, you can understand Hamevin Davar Mitoch Davar from what Rav Judah was sharing with you earlier a few minutes ago. I know. I remember, but I can imagine that you yourselves are feeling torn. Because on the one hand, you are in one of the, if not the most happy places on the planet. And your job is to share that happiness with others. And you know the special job you're doing. And at the same time, there's a war going on. Some people call it a matzav. Some people call it a situation. Some people, the army is calling it an operation. It's a war. There's a war going on in Eretz Yisrael right now. This is not history. This is not some kind of geography lesson or history lesson or political science lesson. There is a war going on at this moment, at this very moment. And it's being fought by people who are your age. And it's hard to be here. I'm telling you personally from the bottom of my heart, it's hard for me. It's very hard for me to be here. I don't just mean in Hask, I mean in the United States. I have three children. Hashem has blessed me with six children. My three older children are in Israel now. And two of them text us, WhatsApp us from bomb shelters every day. Every day. And what I have found is that it's much harder. Most of the people here are not yet parents. Hashem should bless you when the time is right with beautiful children. And I have found that it is much harder to be a parent of someone in a bomb shelter than someone in a bomb shelter. I found that, for example, when Rav Judah mentioned that I served in the Israeli army, and I did. I found it much harder to be the parent of a soldier than it was to be a soldier myself. And maybe, you know, when the time is right, you'll appreciate that. You probably already do. So I have two children who are there. And I have another child who's there, who's literally on the front lines, if not on the other side of the front lines. The last few days, he was not. He was serving in Hebron for Shabbos, and now they called him back to the base for a little while. But and it's hard for me to be here. But I also have a job. I have a job to see my in-laws. I have a job to see my parents. I have a job to be with you, and it's a zechus for me to do that. And I wanted to share with you what I think is this dichotomy that I'm experiencing, and maybe it'll help you also. But I really begin by saying that I think that you don't need to hear this from me. Most of this you know already, and whatever you don't know, Rav Judah has said so eloquently, and I would just, with apologies to him, I would tell you to really, you know, grab him and Rabbi Willig and the other beautiful leaders here and learn from them. So we're in a war right now, and as recently as today, five soldiers gave their lives for me and for you, and five families are mourning, and five sets of cousins and parents and grandparents and children are mourning. So we have to remember that and keep that in mind. With everything else going on, as you already know, we're already in the second of the 9 days, 8 days to go, and we're hoping, really looking forward on a variety of planes to be celebrating on the 9th of Av. I'm so excited for you to be able to tell your children that you remember what it used to be like mourning on Tisha B'Av. You're going to tell your children. They'll probably still understand English. Your mother tongue is English. I don't know about your spouse and their... And I don't know about your children's mother tongue, but they'll understand. And you'll tell them in English, or maybe Hebrew if it's easier. You'll say, you know, I remember on Tisha B'Av we used to mourn. And they're going to think that you're crazy. What are you talking about, Tisha B'Av? You're talking about the... You mean, I'm packing up now. I'm going on a... We're dancing in the streets of Yerushalayim all the way to the Beit HaMikdash. They're going to really think you're crazy. You're going to have to take some kind of lucidity test to make sure that you're still clear. No, I remember what it was like sitting on the floor, and I remember we didn't eat. What are you talking about, we didn't eat? Ashes. We used to have the last thing we ate. Eggs. What are you talking about? That was Tisha B'Av when I was a kid. Now it's something else. So we meet Hashem in 8 days, we'll be celebrating. But Av is exactly what Rav Judah was saying. This mixture, Rosh Chodesh, renewal, and yet at the same time, it's Rosh Chodesh Av. Mematim b'simcha. It doesn't say we erase simcha. It doesn't say we have no simcha. We reduce our simcha. So I think, and I have a son in the army. I speak to him maybe once a week. Usually they take the phones away. That's a new thing that Israel learned, by the way. In 2006, when Israel went into Lebanon, soldiers kept their phones with them. And they would call their parents from the base and say it's cold, and the enemy heard. And it was not good for our children. So nowadays, soldiers have their phones taken away. And it's very hard. Anyway, I think, so speaking as somebody who has a child in the army, and neighbors and friends who are in the army. I also I work a little while in Moshava, and we arranged a list of all the Moshava campers and counselors that are in the army, a list of about 45 people, and talking to them and their parents. So I wanted to share with you some of their perspectives. I'm not the only one who knows people in the army. Everyone here knows somebody. Everybody here has a cousin, everybody here has a sibling. Everyone here knows of somebody. We're a small nation. And so I don't think that I'm sharing anything new, but I do think that I can perhaps share with you an insight that they are thinking. And maybe just a few ideas about that. The expression that I think what people are thinking in Israel is that they are realistically positive. Or we'll call it realistically optimistic. this dichotomy that Rav Judah was talking about. On the one hand, is realistically, I keep saying we're in a war, and it's not a game. People your age running into bomb shelters. I heard Rav Willig mention earlier about the halachos of showering during the 9 days. One of the problems that they have in some of these southern towns is that people are afraid to shower. Not because of the 9 days, but because they're afraid to be caught in the shower when the siren goes off. The average number of rockets that have fallen on Israel since this has begun is approximately one every 5 minutes. 24/7. One every 5 minutes. And many people your age have not had one siren go off or two. They've had 150 sirens going off. My wife's cousin, who's pregnant, was driving in her car. 8 months pregnant, driving in her car, siren goes off, and she had to jump out of her car, middle of the street, and run to the side, and lie down, 8 months pregnant, hoping that the rocket wouldn't fall anywhere near her. She's one of 7 million people who have that same exact experience. This is all on the realistic side. The people are nervous. People are nervous. We're dealing with a whole new set of skills that we never thought we would have to have. I do not know how to counsel and to advise and to help my son, who's 6,000 miles away, who WhatsApped me. It's a new world now. He didn't have time to call. He WhatsApped me that he's heading. This was, we got it late last night, my wife and I. He headed today to a funeral. My son is in the paratroop, Tzanchanim. So a fellow Tzanchan was killed. He's got to go to a funeral now. And then turn right around and go back and do the same thing he's doing. I don't even know where to begin. How to help him. And that's scary. When I say realistically, this is a real... It's real. And it's scary. And anybody who says they're not scared is either stupid or lying. It's scary. It's very scary. And that's all on the realistic side. I said that I think that, who could speak for everyone, but it seems to me that people are realistically optimistic, realistically positive. Realistic, as I said, they're nervous. You have people in this camp. Some of you may work with them during the day. Whose children are in the army now? And I can tell you, not only do I have someone who's in the army, I'm married to someone who has a child in the army. My wife and I, child in the army. And a mother's a mother. And a mother, speaking for my wife, she doesn't know that I'm saying this, but she hasn't had a full night's sleep since, and we're far away. Hasn't had a full night's sleep since this whole thing started. Wake up at every couple hours checking the phone. Did someone WhatsApp? Did someone call? It's every time you turn. Is there news? Where? And if your child calls, we were thrilled. We were ecstatic when my son said that his biggest problem. He was sitting at that time 3 kilometers away from the Gaza border. What's the problem? Bugs. He wants us to bring back bug spray from the United States. I said, halavai, it should be your biggest problem. Bugs. Too many bugs. It's boiling. Deserts. And so with everywhere you turn, someone has news for you. Somebody who works in this camp, who has a son, not on the Gaza border, on the other side of the Gaza border, if you know what I mean, for days at a time, told me that someone came over to her and wants to share some news about some camp going on. There's a meeting, whatever it was. So the person went over to her. Her son's in the army. She's not sleeping either. Someone came over to her and said, "Did you hear?" And she, her eyes fell out of her head. "Did you hear that there's going to be a meeting today?" But every time you turn, you're nervous. And I'm not trying, obviously, to sugarcoat this. So that's all on the realistic side. Seems to me, though, that Klal Yisrael, I'm not talking about, you know, esoterically, I'm not talking theoretically. I'm talking realistically, people are positive. As much as all these people want to come home, they do want to get the job done. They want to finish this. And for all the mourning that we've been experiencing the last few days, the feeling is very strong that had we not been on the border, those dozens and of tunnels lead into kibbutzim and moshavim right there next to Gaza. And we'd be mourning, it seems, many, many, many times over. The plans of the people, of the terrorists, are to get you. Are to get you. And to get people like you, and to get people who you know. And so they want to come home, but they want to get the job done. It also seems to me that the reason why they are positive is because if you take a very short look, a very cursory look, at every single ge'ulah that has ever been experienced by our people, from Mitzrayim to Ezra's time, and everywhere in between, even before Mitzrayim, this is what the Geula looks like. This is what the Geula looks like. Nobody ever promised a rosy walk into Acharit HaYamim. Every Geula that you and I have ever learned about, read about, studied, shied over, every single one starts in a very scary way. And you'll see the Maharal, and you'll see others who explain why it has to be. This is what Geula looks like. This is what Geula sounds like. It's a very exciting time. And so when I say that people are realistically positive, they're not in a dreamland, they know that this is war, and they know that people are dying. People are getting killed, people are getting injured. Their injuries, we'll say Tehillim today, and Amitz Hashem, the war will be over, and we'll... And they're going to be injured forever. Or dead. Until Tzchias HaMesim happens. And at the same time, we know and recognize and realize that this is what it looks like. This is what we are experiencing. And you could go ask the Kuzari, or you can ask the Rambam, you can ask Rabbi Akiva, you can ask the Chafetz Chaim. They would beg to be alive today, to watch what you are watching, and to read what you are reading, and to experience what you are experiencing. To be able to fight for our own country? You go back and talk to your great-grandmother or great-grandfather. You probably never met them. I didn't yet meet mine. And you tell them that there is a person over there in a uniform. What your great-grandfather or great-grandmother would do is probably instinctively turn around and run away. Because the absolute, ruba de ruba, vast majority of the history of the world has seen people in uniform trying to kill you. And me. And all of a sudden, go tell your great-grandfather, and go tell the Chafetz Chaim, and go tell Rabbi Akiva, and go tell the Vilna Gaon, that that soldier who is walking towards you is speaking Hebrew, is carrying a gun that was developed by Jewish minds,
who is sitting in a tank or flying a plane that was built and is in the by Jewish people and is in the envy of the world, who's got Lashon HaKodesh on his chest, who is here not to hurt you, but is here to protect you, B'Shem Hashem. Tell that to Rabbi Akiva. And tell it to the Chofetz Chaim. And they would beg to watch what you're watching and to experience what you're experiencing. Now, how does that apply to me and how does that impact you? And so I think that, and I'll go for a couple more minutes, I think that the army is a very good mashal to what you and I must be doing. I'm going to use the word could. You and I must be doing. The Israeli army learned the hard way. I mentioned the war in Lebanon in 2006. The Israeli army learned the hard way that you can have all the commandos and the Rambos and the G.I. Joes with the various colored, you know, berets and all the medals in the world. But if they don't have boots, or if they don't have coats, or if they don't have food, it's almost meaningless. In 2006, men were sent to Lebanon and the mamish didn't have coats. They didn't have food to eat. And the army learned literally that every single person contributes. There's a guy in our neighborhood who works in an office in Tel Aviv for the army. And that office is responsible to make sure that the officers in the army get their pensions and the proper type of pension and the amount of money. And you look at someone like that and you say, okay, he's not a commando this, and he's not a pilot that. How far do you think our army would get if there were no pensions for the officers? The officers didn't get paid. Not very far. And we learned that the hard way. And so it's fascinating how with all the important work that everybody does, literally every single person is important. And if one person forgets that or doesn't do their job properly, the whole system breaks down. It's incredible. And so I think that that message in the army. I have a neighbor who is who has vision problems, and so the army has told him that he can't be in a combat unit. So, in some places in the world, they say, "Ah, thank God, I'm off." He is scratching his way into the army. He's begging to be taken into the army. He can't see very well. I think he's legally blind. And he's scratching his way into the army to work in computers and in intelligence. Everybody has to do something. So I think, I believe, and I'll even say that I know, that is true for you and me. I believe from the bottom of my heart that I know that you feel distant. I also do. But I believe that every one of you and me together are doing a job that there's nobody else that can do that. Nobody else can do this job. And hopefully you've heard, I think you have, the gratitude of parents, for example. Who's to say that the tefillot of your camper's parents, that they're able to sit and daven properly, say Tehillim properly, without their child here, you know, their child with them. Who's to say? What tefillot are being penetrating the kisei shel kavod because
of your working with their money. Everybody contributes. I think everybody contributes. And I think everybody has to do their part and our part, really, to continue this geula. We read in last week's parsha about the halachot of someone who kills b'shogeg rachmana litzlan. Someone who kills b'shogeg has to run to one of the arei miklats, three be'er hayarden and three in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Israel, and they stay there, away from their families, away from their jobs, away from their communities. And they stay there. For how long? I don't know. Could be a week. Could be a year. Could be 40 years. What are they waiting for? That's right, the death of the Kohen Gadol. And we know the Gemara tells us in Masechet Makot, Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara tells us that the mothers of the Kohanim Gedolim, used to walk around and give food and give clothing so that the people who are in the Arei Miklat don't daven for the death of their sons. And I think that message, it's a Mishnah Makot Yud Aleph, I think that message is a message for you and me. And we can learn a number of things from that halacha. Kohen Gadol, the mother of the Kohen Gadol, walks around and gives food and clothing so that those people wouldn't daven for the death of the Kohen Gadol. Message number one that I think is relevant to you and me. A person kills b'shogeg. They get sent away to some ir miklats, who knows how far away from home, and they're sitting there for 5 years, 10 years, davening every day. I want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home. And all of a sudden, a little old lady comes around with brownies. So what, so now I don't want to go home? I don't want to go home anymore? Nice, thank you for the brownies, I still want to go home. Just because I'm getting, new clothing. Getting, an apple pie, so now I'm not going to daven anymore? What does that do? What does that do? So I actually thought, and perhaps one can suggest, it's not exactly relevant to this, but I thought the shot was, it may still be true, that really, really, really deep down, even the person who was in Galus in the Ir Miklat, doesn't really want the death of the Kohen Gadol. And so all it took was a little reminder. You're going to daven for the death of another Jew? Chas v'shalom. Your it's a little reminder. I got to put my head on straight. But Rav Moshe Tzvi Bergman, who's the son-in-law of Rav Shach, says something that's so beautiful. He says the following: what does it do? Sitting in galut, sitting in your miklats, you get a brownie and you get an apple pie. So no. When a person sitting in galut, maybe they are mamish davening for this, the death of the Kohen Gadol, and now the old lady comes around and gives something to eat. So now, instead of davening 100% for something, I'll daven 99% for something. A little connection. Look at the difference between davening for something 100%, full heart, full kavanah, versus 99%. That's all she had to do. She did her job. Once they're not davening 100% anymore, it doesn't do anything. The impact is less. And so I think, as you heard a few minutes ago, part of our job, and your job during the day, everybody has their job. Your job is to be there for your campers, and your job is to take care of them. And maybe that means dancing with them, and maybe it means singing with them, and maybe it means live music, and it means shaving, or whatever, all the halakhot you just heard. But then you do have evenings, and evening is time to be with friends, and evening is time to relax, evening is time to call your parents, evening is time to socialize, absolutely. It's also a time for learning, a time for davening, 100%. 3 extra minutes, but 100%. I know that davening, if you daven with your campers, I know it's very hard. I know it's very hard. People ask me every summer, how do you daven, and how I can take care, and even if I take off, my co-counselor. I know it's very hard. And the job now is perhaps at that time of day, maybe not to daven, maybe not to daven. Maybe that's your job right now, to not do that. But you have a little time in the evening, 100% tefillah, take a mizmor of Tehillim. Can you imagine if you just spent a few minutes each night, 150 mizmorim, 3 weeks of camp, do the math. It's not that many mizmorim. Finish, imagine making a siyum on Sefer Tehillim, 100% a focus of energy, perhaps. You never know what that can do, and we'll see in a moment what that can do, and what that will conclude. Another message from the story of the mother of the Kohen Gadol is you've got a nation of people who are davening for the Kohen Gadol to live. Or you have a nation of people who are at least not davening for the Kohen Gadol to die. And you have one person sitting in some who knows where, in an Ir Miklat somewhere, davening. So why should the mother of the Kohen Gadol even care about this? Who cares? And what you see from the Mishnah, and you see from the Gemara's discussion, the power of tefillah from a broken heart. The power of tefillah of a broken heart. And we're all brokenhearted right now. And to take that tefillah of a broken heart and to focus really, literally 100% on people who are like you, who just want to live and enjoy and get out. Imagine the powers of our tefillah. And the Mesillas Yesharim tells us, if you ever learn the Mesillas Yesharim, Perek Yutet, the Mesillas Yesharim asks a question that you and I have asked. I myself have asked. It's in general, you should look at the right in the middle of the parak. It happens to be davening up for the Churban. But says the Ramchal, Perek Yutet, Bezeur Chelke HaChasidut, says the Mesillat Yesharim, Ve'im Yomar Adam, Miani, Umani, Shet Palel, Ala Galut, Ve'al Yerushalayim, Ve'chule, Hamitnei Tfilati, Yikansu HaGaluyot, Ve'titzmach HaYeshua. Who am I? I'm a little person in Parksville, New York. Truthfully, none of us have ever heard of Parksville, New York until we came to Hasbro. True, I never did. Woodburn, maybe. Parksville. Sitting in Parksville, I'm a simple person. Who am I? Rabbi Akiva Eiger davened, the Chasam Sofer davened, Abaye davened, Rava davened, Rabbi Soloveitchik davened, Rabbi Cook. Who am I? This is what the Ramchal asks. Who am I? Says the Mesillat Yesharim, I think what we've been saying. Tshuvato betzido. As we said in a Gemara, he quotes a Gemara from a Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet. Lefikach nivra adam yechidi, kedei shekol echad yomar bishvili nivra olam. We believe be'emuna shleima, that every one of us is doing a job. Every single one. It's a huge responsibility. It's hugely exciting for me. My tefillah, brokenhearted as it is, focusing as much as I can, 100%, of Rabbi Soloveitchik did his job. It's true. And Rav Kook did his job. It's true. And all the gedolim today are doing their job. But you know, they can't complete their job without me. Without me. And I can't, and you can't, and they can't, without you. You cannot go to sleep until the job is done. HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally is waiting for your tefillah. I think it's hugely empowering. It's a huge responsibility. It's scary, frightening. Waiting for me. I can't go to sleep now. I have too much work to do. Now, part of the work and part of your work is to go to sleep at a healthy hour. I don't want to sound like your parents. I don't know if any of you have told you, you got to go to sleep at a proper time. You got to gather strength. Your primary job now is to take care of the campers, whatever job you have in camp. Your job also is to daven. My job is to daven. My job is to stay in touch with Eretz Yisrael and Am Yisrael. If you know someone who lives there, you have any idea, I have gotten emails. I remember, I happen to live in Israel, and yes, I have a son in the army, but I'm out of Israel now. And I have gotten emails as recently as yesterday, as recently as Friday. It happens to be a parent of a girl who had gone to our school, and she just wrote, "I want you to know that I'm thinking of you. I hope you're okay." She thinks I'm in Israel, I guess. I have to tell her I'm not. But it was so nice. It was so nice to hear that. And it's very possible that she was sitting at home saying, "He gets all these emails," and I do. I'm blessed with a lot of emails. But none have been more important than that email. And I've gotten a few like that. Most of them are from closer friends, but I'll put in quote, because it's a word that you use, it's random. I'll tell you one last thing, I really am going to end. I know you're tired and exhausted. I say one last time, my son's in the army, and he got a package from a school child nearby. The package, I think, was, you know, size of a softball. It was not 30 feet tall. And what was in this package? Okay, he was sitting on the Gaza border in Gaza. What was in this package? It was a chocolate bar, a sucking candy, a toothpaste, and a small note from this school child. And he talked about the toothpaste like he was given a pot of water. It was crazy. We thought he lost his mind. I'm sure that child somewhere, maybe a teacher told him or her, why should I put a package in and get it? So little things do so much. So do that. So you have someone who's in Israel now, on a program, living there, maybe they're totally fine. Which is in the air. Quick email. How are you? I'm thinking of you. You know what? It takes you 20 seconds to do. It is the most beautiful thing to receive. I would imagine that our tefillot are similar. I can go to sleep, or I can say one more day, one more this morning. Step up. I can go to sleep one more. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't change. But I can change. A small little toothpaste. A small little to my nose. Small little tefillah. And I think it has to be that if everybody here and everybody Klal Yisrael did that, I may be sitting over there, they may be sitting over there, but somebody in Parksville is thinking of me. I think everybody did that. I think we have to believe that come 8 days from now, on the 9th of Av, we must. It won't only be Camp Half that's playing live music. All of Klal Yisrael will be dancing in the streets of Rehov Yafo and Rehov King George, all the way, not to the Kotel, by the way. You should erase that word from here. It's a beautiful thing, the Kotel. We're not dancing to the Kotel, guys. We're not stopping at the Kotel. The Mirza Shem will dance all the way to the Kotel. Hatzlacha, everybody. Enjoy. I'm looking forward to continuing the discussion with everybody. Mirza Shem. Laila Tov.